Good. Thank you, Gary. I appreciate so much getting to come tonight. I've always loved the Brinesburg Church, and I still do. I know some of you better than I do others of you, but I was telling LaWanda and Greg when we were coming in, John Hoover used to refer to it as Brinesburg, as though it had a T in it. And so I just asked him, I said, John, it's none of my business, and I don't care, really, but why do you call it Brinesburg? He said, well, that's what the people there call it. Do any of you call it Brinesburg? They've all gone on, but I never understood why it had to have a T in it. It doesn't have a T in it. That's why it's Brinesburg. But he called it Brinesburg, and so did others, and so that's... But I'm glad to get to be with you tonight. And the idea tonight, the theme that Gary talked to me about a long time ago, and by the way, you'll notice in the little bitty print at the top, this is 2 weeks ago. That's when I was supposed to come, and that's when the weather came. And we didn't get out of the house that night. And many of you didn't either, I'm sure. But anyway, that's when I had it ready. And so this is looking tonight. Now, don't get scared when you see six pages of stuff, because we're not going to cover all that. In fact, I would like for you, if you don't mind, to flip with me through it right quick, because the last five we're not going to do much with. So turn to the back of the front page, Ascertaining the Will of God. It was Leslie D. Weatherhead who wrote the book entitled The Will of God. And to make a very long story short, what happened in my life when I was young, my mother had died when I was 11. My first cousin got killed the next year. A Roman candle backfired into his abdomen and it killed him. And people kept coming to the funeral home and saying, it's the will of God. It's God's will. Well, it didn't make much sense to me when I was 11. It made less sense to me when I was 12. And by the time I was 13, I developed quite a smart mouth. And I had wondered maybe if I was next on his hit list, because I really was having problems processing this thing of God's will. So I began to study it in some earnest. I really, really wanted to learn what the truth was about the will of God. So I dug into it, but I didn't find a lot of relief in my study. I got through Fried Hardeman. I got through Oklahoma Christian. Got through Murray State we didn't study the Bible there, but I got through my formal schooling, and I still hadn't gotten it. I was having trouble. Kenneth Hoover was at Denton at that time, and he and I talked about it. He said, I'll tell you what you do. Ree Wood is one of our secretaries, and she has a book by Leslie Weatherhead, and he said it's not in print anymore. And she may not loan it to you. She may just let you read it in her presence because it's that precious. So I went over to see Ree and I said, Ree, I really would appreciate it if I could borrow your book, The Will of God. She said, do you promise me that you will take good care of it and don't break it? I said, I promise I'll do my best. I won't underline anything. I won't damage it. I took that book home, read it in one sitting. Now, that's not like me, but I read that thing in one sitting. And when I got finished reading it, my wife thought I had lost the rest of my mind. I was shouting. I said, that's it. That's what I've been looking for all my life. That is the key that I never could find. And what Weatherhead was saying is that the will of God is in the three areas, the intentional will of God, the circumstantial will of God, and the ultimate will of God. The intentional will of God is the way it was set up in the beginning. Adam and Eve were in a world with no sin. And they were to obey God. They were to have a wonderful life. And then Satan came and tempted Eve, and she succumbed to the temptation. Adam succumbed to the temptation. And sin has been here ever since. That kicked in the circumstantial will of God, the circumstance being sin. God can still accomplish His will for mankind, but it will be in spite of sin and through the remedy of sin, which began to be revealed in the Christ who would come. First, of course, in prophecy and then in fulfillment. And then the ultimate will of God is that his people would be with him in heaven forever, and that righteous people would be saved eternally. Now, you can't be righteous by yourself, and so you get to have the righteousness of Christ. My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I don't have any. Isaiah says all our righteousnesses are as filthy rags, soiled garments. And so I don't have righteousness that I can bring and earn my salvation. Can't do that. But by the grace of God, I can have salvation. By the mercy of God, I can miss the punishment I'm due. And therefore, I have the opportunity to come to be with the Lord when this is over, which is the ultimate will of God. Nothing will thwart the ultimate will of God. He's going to accomplish his ultimate will. He gives us the power of choice. And we have the opportunity to say yes or no to God. The five tenets of Calvinism are all patently false. All of them. The total hereditary depravity, unconditional election, limited atonement, irresistible grace, and perseverance of the saints. All have a smattering of truth in them in places, but when you put them together, you have a foreordination, predestination situation that God never, ever intended. But what we have is the will of God being accomplished. You choose to say yes or no to God. I choose to say yes or no. And I maintain that power of choice all of my life. He will not thrust it upon me against my will. I therefore have to conform my will to his will. And I read in my Bible what he says. And that is his will. And I'm to conform to that. Not to change the Bible to my will, but to change my will to his word. And keep doing that the rest of my life. Well, that's what finally came into focus with Weatherhead's book. Now, the Bible is the key to it, of course. But Weatherhead pulled it together for me to where I could make sense of it. And the book is back in print, by the way. I gave it back to Ree. And she checked it real close to see if I hadn't damaged it. And she was a dear, dear, dear sweet lady, and I always enjoyed being around her. But it's out in print again, and I'm so glad it is. And if you have a chance to get a copy of it, I think it's used to be $5. Of course, hamburgers used to be $5, but I know it's out there, and it's worth whatever it costs. And read it in one sitting, and I think you'll be really glad to get to see what that does. But ascertaining the will of God is to try to see what does the Bible say on the subject. Pray fervently for the wisdom of God in finding what he wants you to do. And then third, to seek the counsel of people who walk closely with the Lord. People can lead you astray, so you put your absolute confidence in the Lord, nobody else. But people who walk closely with the Lord can have a lot of influence on you. Elders, for instance, shepherds who tend the flock are to be ensamples to the flock or examples to the flock. It would be wonderful for brethren to be able to sit with an elder or sit with the elders and to seek their insight and wisdom and counsel on things that have to do with decision making in the kingdom. And then the fourth of those steps would be to ask, what would Jesus do and what did he do under similar circumstances? And what would I do if he were literally walking by my side? So the example of Jesus is perfect. The example of others can be helpful. But you pray for wisdom and insight, and you seek the will of God by reading and studying his word with an open and receptive mind. And then the rest of those are from chapters in Batzel Barrett Baxter's book, When Life Tumbles In. I didn't number the pages, but chapter one in his book is Life is Worth Living. He calls it The Temptation of Suicide. There are many, many people who consider suicide as an alternative to the problems they're facing in life. It's always an option. It's always a bad option, but it's always out there. And we need to know that, and we need to be sure that we're guarding against it ourselves and that we're helping other people as they guard against it as well. I even included on your paper the hotline, the nationwide hotline of 1-800-273-8255 or TALK, T-A-L-K, and there will always be somebody there who will be able to talk with a person who is considering suicide or is dealing with someone who is threatening suicide. But the point being made by Baxter is life really is worth living, even when it goes sour, even when people have mistreated you. Life is worth living, even when you lose money in the stock market, even when, no matter what happens, life really is worth living because it transcends everything that is physical, and it must go then to the spiritual. And look on the back of that one. Chapters 2, 3, and 4 of his book, he deals with loneliness, frustration, and fear. And then in chapter 12, he deals with a deeper purpose of life. The spiritual realm has to be factored in. And then on the back of it all, the last chapter in his book is Happiness Just a Word. And he there pulls it together so that we are happy people who find the will of God for our lives. And it's not just a word. It has to do with the things of the world being placed in proper perspective. One of the stories he tells in that chapter, and it always interests me because it does the same thing to me every time. He tells about a preacher who was preaching in a not too well-to-do neighborhood. And in the older days, no air conditioning, so he had his office where he was studying and preparing sermons or whatever he was doing. A lady came by with a chocolate cake and wanted him to have that to take home so that their family could enjoy it. So he set the cake over by the window, and there were some kids playing in the neighborhood there, and they were out just in, I guess, the parking lot or the yard of the church. And he noticed that they were looking at the cake, and they were, in other words, eyeing that thing and really wishing they could have some of that. So just on the spur of the moment, he decided that he would invite them in. So he invited all these children in, and he cut the cake, and they ate it. They ate all of it. And he said, that cake was intended for my family and me. But I got more good out of that cake by seeing it enjoyed by these children. And he said, I didn't even get to taste it. And my wife didn't get to taste it. And our children didn't get to taste it. But that cake had a message in it that is far more important than the physical taste of the cake. It is the spiritual enjoyment that other people can have when you share with them in the name of the Lord to the glory of God. And he said, this man was telling that at a graduation ceremony, and he said, can't you just taste the cake right now? And every time I get to that part, I'm salivating, that chocolate is, how wonderful can it be? Chocolate cake. Every year for my birthday, that's what I get because that's what I ask for. And I love chocolate cake. But I don't have to eat it to enjoy it. I can see somebody else enjoy it and get more joy out of it because happiness is not something that's just reserved for me. It's not a selfish thing at all. But when I get to share, then it becomes far better because it is shared. Now, go back, if you would, to the front. We'll stay there for a little while. And I know the time frame, and I'll try to be real careful about that. I started to tell Gary a minute ago. He was telling me, he said, all right, it's okay if you go a little overtime, but I won't do that. I thought I'd stop about 5 minutes early, and then you might hire me. Maybe not. I'm not employable right now anyway. But when you're looking for your purpose in life, you're looking for that. Some people never find it, and others find it early on in life. Notice that Jesus told his purpose. He said in Matthew 1:21, regarding his birth, she shall bring forth a son. You shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. Why did he come? He came to save people from their sins. And so it was told even before he got here what his purpose would be once he got here. And then going on to Luke 19, the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. That's why he came, to seek and save that which is lost. And in John 4 and John 6 and John 18, he's talking about, to this purpose, for this purpose did I come into the world. Now, that was while he was here in the physical body. Today, he's still here in a body, but the body is the church. And you and I make up parts of that body. While he was here in his physical body, he went from place to place, helping people, teaching, preaching the will of God, the word of God, performing miracles. We're not going to do that, but we can read about his, and we can see how he blessed the children. We can see how he took the lunch of a child and blessed multitudes with it. I've often wondered about that little boy when he got home that night. He gave up his five crackers and two sardines, as Barber used to say. He had his five crackers and two sardines. That was going to be his lunch. And he gave it over to the apostles, and they took it to Jesus, and he blessed it and fed the multitude. And he did the teaching and all those things. Can you just see that little boy getting home that night? He said, "Mama, I've got something I've got to tell you." And he tells her, and she said, "I've told you to quit making up these stories." He said, "It's the truth, Mama. You gave me my lunch, and I gave it to this man, and he blessed it and fed thousands." And he's telling it, and they had 12 baskets of fragrance left over. Fragrance? It was fragments. But it probably had some fragrance to it, too, with all that fish. But the beauty of it is it's a true story, and it's something that that boy would never forget as long as he lived. And when I look at a lad today, maybe about 12, 10, 11, 12, 13, when I see somebody that age today, I'm thinking, Jesus took something from a little fella just like that and blessed multitudes. And if we can bring up our children in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord and to try to teach them, now we don't program them, they're not robots. They don't do exactly what we want them to sometimes. Nobody's going to do this perfectly. But if we can bring them up in the way of the Lord and they can then decide they want that for their lives and will be people who bless the lives of others, who share the good news with other people, they find their purpose in life by looking at Jesus, who revealed his purpose in life. So when he was here in his physical body, he accomplished some things. He's now here in his spiritual body, which is his church, and he can still accomplish some things. And when you and I do what we do to his glory, under his empowerment, always trying to emulate his example, to conform to his image, and to obey his commands, humble service in the kingdom of God, trying very hard to conform to the image of Christ by thinking as he thought and speaking as he spoke, and then acting as he acted. Keep on doing that. Even in our human frailty, we're going to have a purpose in life that is to be like Jesus. That's our purpose, to try every day to be more and more like Jesus. That'll make us unselfish. That will make us sacrificial. That will make us grateful to the Father in heaven. And it will bring great fulfillment for us in life as we meet the challenges of life, no matter what they might bring us. Now, how am I going to find my purpose in life? I've already mentioned, study the Bible diligently, pray for wisdom, seek the counsel of those who walk closely with the Lord, and ask, what would Jesus do, and what would I have him do, what would he have me do if he were literally walking by my side, and I keep on making my decisions based on that. Several years ago, I had a rather lengthy conversation with a young lady. I've known her all her life, and I really, really have a special place in my heart for her. But she came and talked to me about what she's wanting to do with her life and feeling that she is stilted because there's so little that she thought she could do. Now, she's a school teacher. And I don't think she wanted to be a preacher. I don't think that was really what she was saying. But she felt that her role in the church was just basically ignored. and that it was somehow substandard, and that since men are the only ones who can be elders because they have to be the husband of one wife, and there's not a woman on earth that can do that, then she felt that she was somehow not as needed and maybe not as appreciated. Well, we talked on about it a while, and it was a serious conversation, and I didn't want to just see if I could be funny and make her feel better. I wanted her to really come through it and to come to a greater understanding of the dignity that she has and of the love and loyalty that she can bring to the table. And so I told her, I said, first of all, preaching is not all it looks like it is sometimes. You wouldn't want to do that probably if you could. It's not a matter of ability. She has plenty of ability. It's not a matter of brain power. She's very, very intelligent. But it's a matter of revelation in the will and word of God as to what we're to do and who's to do it. All of us are to be faithful, but not all of us are going to do the same things. But here's what I told her. I said, when you march into that classroom with those students, go in there as a representative of Jesus Christ. Now, in a public school setting, you can't preach out loud from the Bible. I understand that. You can't do that. We used to, way back then, we had a Bible reading every day and prayer every day before we started classes. You can't do that now. But what I was saying was, go in there as a representative of Jesus Christ. See what you're doing as a ministry and accept that role to the glory of God, to the good of the students. When the students come into your classroom, you show them the love of God. Some of them are not going to see it at home. But if they can see in you a committed child of God, knowing that you care about their feelings, you're trying to do a good job academically of helping them prepare for life and for college and whatever, but to do what you do as a child of God, as a representative of Jesus Christ. March into that classroom as a minister of Christ. By the way, the word minister doesn't mean big shot. It means servant. That's all it ever meant. Servant. It can even mean slave. And so you and I are ministers of the gospel of Christ, male or female. We're all in a ministry. But to march into that classroom as a teacher, and if you're teaching math, or if you're teaching English, or teaching history, whatever you're teaching, you teach it not only as truth, whatever you're studying, but teach it from the perspective of a concerned child of God who is trying to make a difference for good in the lives of other people. People can tell if you love them. I used to have a dog, and the dog was smart enough to know if you loved her. You hit her with a newspaper about 3 times right in the face. It doesn't matter how many times you tell her you love her. She knows you don't. And people are smarter than dogs most of the time. We need to know that we are to make a difference for good in the lives of those people. That's your purpose in life, is to make a difference for good in the lives of the people around you. Well, this lady went on to school and taught her classes and did her thing. She had a student who was not doing well in the class. She was teaching math, and he just was not getting it. He had plenty of ability. He just did not do it. And she asked him one day, she said, I know you can do better than this test shows. I know that you can. She said, I want to help you, not to give you a grade that you don't earn, but to help you so that you can succeed in this work. She said, when do you have a free period in the day? And he told her when it was. She said, that's the same hour that I have my planning period. If you come to my classroom during that hour, I will work with you and I believe you can get this. He came and she helped him. He came another time and she helped him. He came another time and she helped him. And about the fourth time that boy came, he got it. He understood. He was catching up and he was going to do well. And he had talked to her. They had talked freely about their lives and things. And this young man was a senior in high school. He had two younger siblings. He had no dad on the scene at all. And the mother got up every morning to go to work at 6. And she worked until 6 p.m. So he got his younger siblings up, got them ready for school, and he took them to school at the elementary school or wherever they could go. And then he came to school, and when school was out, he picked them up, and he helped them with their homework, and he got their supper ready, and got their baths and get them ready for bed. Then the mom came home. And they visited just for a few minutes. The younger ones then went to bed, went to sleep, and he was then to get his homework and try to do what he could do at school. Well, he wasn't doing it because there wasn't time to get it all done. But she helped him, and he understood it. And on that fourth time that he came to see her, and he got it, he was so happy that he could understand it and he could do the work. And she was going to help him make up some things that he had already messed up. And he looked at her and said, God must have sent you into my life. And she said, you are exactly right. You are exactly right. And she called me. And she said, I am a minister of Jesus Christ in a public school. Who would have ever thought it? She said, I want to thank you for helping me find my purpose. And again, I don't think she wanted to be an elder or deacon or preacher or anything at church. I think what she was feeling was that she really wasn't needed. That she was really overlooked and might as well just kind of skip it. That's still not true at church. There are lots and lots of things that ladies could do, should do, and are doing in the fellowship of the local churches. If you take the women out, with all due respect to us men, it's going to be a struggling bunch. But when you put us together, doing what we can do, what we can learn to do, then it works as a body is supposed to work. The hand is not supposed to do what the foot does. The nose is not supposed to accomplish what the ear does, but they don't need to be in competition with each other. They need to work in harmony with each other so that the body can function as it should to the glory of the head, to accomplish the will of the head. Jesus is the head of his church. I'm part of it. You're part of it. I'm a different part now from what I was for 39 years at Glendale and Seventh of Poplar. I'm not in the pulpit anymore there. I retired from that. But now I get to travel and do other things, and I get to hear somebody else preach every once in a while. And boy, that's a lark. I seldom got to hear anybody but me. And I love the variety of that. I love to get to hear other people. But there are things I can do now that I couldn't do then. There are some things that I could do then that I can't do now. But I don't want to accentuate and exaggerate my limitations. I want to seize the opportunities that are there now and capitalize upon them for the glory of God and encourage you to do the same. You say, well, I'm nothing. I don't really matter. Please don't do that yourself. Gary Beecham came and spoke to us several years ago, and he said that there was a fellow in the church where he preached in Dallas that had become a Christian at 54 years of age. And he felt that he pretty well wasted his life. But he was a mechanic by trade. And Gary said, I was walking to the church building one night, and I saw him standing out in the front. And when I got closer, he went around behind the door. And he was wiping his nose and his eyes. And Gary said, I just walked around behind the door with him. He said, Jack, are you okay? He said, yes, Gary, I'm fine. He said, I'm just so thrilled. He said, you see that bus that just drove up out there? He said, there were 22 children on that bus. And he said, the windows were open, and they were singing, Oh, How I Love Jesus, because He first loved me. He said, last Thursday night, I changed out the clutch in that bus.
And he said, I now feel like I'm part of the team. There's something I can do. He said, I can't preach. I can't lead a public prayer. I can't teach a class. I can't lead the singing. He said, there's just so few things I could do. And I just said, how sad. I've wasted my life. I'm 54 and have done nothing. He said, I can do something and I'm going to do it. You see, he could do that and not even have to charge for it. He did it after hours. He worked all day and then he worked on the bus at night. But he was part of the team. We need people. We're not talking about money, but we need people who are willing to do what they can do and what they can learn to do as they accomplish their purpose in life. Yours is different from mine. Don't envy me. And I won't envy you. Let me work with you. Let's join hands and work side by side for the glory of the same Lord rather than turning our weapons on each other. The church is the only army I know of that shoots its wounded. We've got to quit it. We've got to quit shooting our wounded. I'm not in competition with you. If you're more successful than I am on some things, praise God. I'm not the enemy. You're not the enemy. Gary has things that he can do that I can't do. I may have some opportunities that he doesn't have. We're not in competition. We're supplementing each other's role because I found my purpose. You found your purpose. Find it and then live it. Now, to summarize and conclude that, let's say it this way. If you're trying to find what you believe the will of God is for your life, don't get in a hurry. It's a lifelong quest, really. But gather up all of your want-tos, whatever they are. Assess best you can your abilities and opportunities. And we're all different on those things. But gather up all of those things and turn them over to God. Turn it over to Him and say, Lord, it may not be much, but this is all there is, and I'm bringing this to You. I'm determined to walk in the footsteps of Jesus to the best of my ability. I'm determined to try to live for Him who died for me. I'm determined to try to learn what I can learn and grow and serve and to fulfill my purpose, even though I don't know what it is altogether. And it may change over time. But I'm willing to give it a good faith effort. I'm not going to wait until I get through college before I settle down to get to work. I'm ready to go to work right now. I'm not going to wait till I retire so I'll have some time on my hands and a lot of money. Dream on, boys and girls. But the point is, now is the time, not some other time. And to do that, supplementing what other people are doing, you're finding your purpose. You turn it over to the will of God because all of your want-tos are under His control now. And then do what you want to. As long as it's right to start with, then do what you want to do. If you want to be a mechanic and change out the clutch in the church's bus, then that is a real opportunity. You better not ride in that bus if I did the clutch work on it. I'm not good at that. I'm not proud of my ignorance, but I don't know a whole lot about mechanics. And don't even think about letting me work on your computer. It ain't going to work at all when I get through with it. My good friend Jimmy Ford joined after he closed his pharmacy in Murray, he joined in with the Fred's network, all the pharmacies and all the Fred's stores throughout the country. They put him back in the pharmacy working back there, and he hit enough buttons, he shut down the entire system of Fred's pharmacies in the computer. They could not do it in Los Angeles in a Fred's pharmacy because he shut it down. He locked that whole thing up for over a day. They couldn't dig it out. He wasn't real good at computers. But we live in a world full of computers. We do need to learn what we can while we can, but be sure we don't over-assess our great value on those things. Back in the old days, it was in cigar boxes and written on paper. And I'm still pretty much of that. If you want to know what I'm supposed to do next, I'll show you this right here. And I wrote it in there, and I know where I'm supposed to go after this. I don't put it in my phone because I had two of those to crash, two Palm Pilots to crash. It gave away everything. I'm just not going to overdo it with technology, thank you. I'm just not going to. But if you can learn it and you understand it, go for it. You do what you can do. Let me do what I can do. Let's both be open to better understandings and wiser use of our time and talents, but do it to the glory of God. Don't worry about who gets credit at church. You say, well, I don't get my name in the bulletin enough. It doesn't matter whether your name's in the bulletin or not. Your name is in the Lamb's Book of Life. That's all that matters. You say, well, I don't make a lot of money. Money's not the issue. It's important. Of course it's important. Anybody that tells you money's not important probably lies about other things too. It is important. But it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is following Jesus, walking in His footsteps, conforming to His image, obeying His commands, and leading other people, especially the younger ones, but leading other people in the pathway of righteousness in following Christ. Would you tonight be resolved no longer to linger, charmed by the world's delight? Things that are higher, things that are nobler, these have allured my sight. I will hasten to Him. If you would come to Him tonight, or come back to Him tonight, and let Him be your Savior and Lord, let Him control your thinking and your words and your actions and your determination to be of use in the kingdom. That's your purpose, is to be Christ-like and to help other people be Christ-like and channel all the glory and attention and honor to Him. And keep doing that as long as He lets you live. It's a wonderful life when it's done right to the glory of God. If we can help you in that, would you please come while we stand and sing?